From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. On some campuses, the university president may start their day happily reading the student newspaper to learn about the latest play the drama department is putting on or read about a new chemistry class. But at the University of Oregon, the president may pick up a copy of the Daily Emerald and find they are in the crosshairs of a deep and thorough investigation. Such is the nature of the Emerald, which is affiliated with the U of O, but fiercely independent. Today on the show, you'll meet the student editor-in-chief and learn how and why this news organization is a launching pad for the next generation of investigative journalists. Then, in the second part of the show, our reporter gets us up to speed on yet another local institution facing budget cuts and staffing reductions. That's next on Oregon on the Record. Full disclosure, KLCC has hired reporters or interns who worked as students at the Daily Emerald, and by and large, we have found them to be outstanding young reporters. Such is the training ground that is the student newspaper on the U of O campus. Right now, you'll hear from its young editor-in-chief about how they do what they do. Tarek Anthony, the Daily Emerald editor-in-chief, great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So for folks who just may not know, I imagine most do, but just in case they don't, what is the Daily Emerald? Explain what the Emerald is.
So the Daily Emerald is the independent student media organization of the University of Oregon. And I like to stress that we're independent from the university because that's what allows us to do most of the reporting that we do about the university. Because they have no control over our content, no funding. We are entirely self-funded by advertisements and donors and other revenue streams, but we're completely separated from the university. And so we have our weekly newspaper and then daily online content in addition to a business side where students sell all the ads and all sorts of other different projects we work on to sustain ourselves.
Okay. Yeah, and so I imagine it's all student-run, right? And there are no faculty that sort of telling you what to do. And certainly administration can't say, hey, I want you to publish X.
For sure, yeah. We have four professional staff members, like our president and publisher. We have a vice president. We have a creative director. And then we have an ad director. But in our bylaws, they have no control over the content. And so we also have a board of directors, which also is separated. So they appoint myself the editor in chief, but it's entirely student run. Anything you see there has been made by students and decided by students.
Okay. How long have you been there?
This is my third school year.
Okay.
I've been there since I started at UO.
Okay.
And, so yeah.
Yeah. Did you always want to become the editor in chief?
I didn't really honestly know how a newsroom worked when I got to UO.
Okay.
I worked in my high school newspaper, but I never knew that about an editor-in-chief or a managing editor or anything like that. And so I would say after my first year, I definitely was interested. And then on my second year, I was for sure, yes.
Okay. Well, tell us what the job entails. What do you do as editor-in-chief of a independent student-run newspaper?
I do a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. My main responsibilities would be to oversee our print product and our print content, and making sure that that's getting that's a whole week process to go into one print edition. And so, and then on Fridays, we're going through the different proofs of all the papers and editing. And then outside of that, I oversee about 100 plus students. So that comes with its own daily responsibilities and issues and mediating between people. And then, what the board likes to tell me is my number one job is to not make sure that we don't get sued. So I'm always on the lookout I'm always on the lookout for preventable issues
sure.
and just the overall reputation and credibility. And so that's my main responsibilities.
Okay. Talk about how you develop or the entire organization develops stories. Who decides or how do you decide, this is a story. We're going to assign a reporter to cover this.
So for our news content, our news reporters pitch their own stories. Mm-hmm. They have their beats for the city and for the university. So there's an administration beat, a student government beat, a city council beat. And so those people are out there and they know what's going on better than I do or their editor does. And so they pitch their own stories and then they get assigned from there. And then, of course, things come up. Like, I always am getting tips. I'm very connected with PIOs and other spokespeople around Lane County. And so I'm always handing out assignments or ideas when I see things that come up that need to be covered.
Okay. Yeah. I'm also curious about, your job. How much of it is doing what you just described, but then how much of it is, mentorship and just helping, like you said, you have more than 100 students that you're overseeing. How much of it is, hey, I've kind of been through this. I know the ropes. Kind of talk about that aspect as well.
Yeah, for sure. We have a lot of people who come in, I guess, freshmen who have never done journalism before. They don't know if they like it. They don't know if they want to make a career out of it. And so I'm always trying to recognize, like, people at varying levels of commitment. Some people that work at the Emerald want to be war photographers and are happy to get tear gassed at the federal building. And other people are, like, biology majors who just want to, like, have fun writing opinion columns. And so it's a constant, like, balance of trying to figure out and trying to balance who the varying levels of interest, because we're all college students in a real newsroom or, like, in a professional newsroom. It would be easier because they're all hired journalists who are there to do journalism. Some people are there for different reasons. And so that's what I try and focus on, because we're all college students and there's a lot of different levels of commitment and time and classes and other clubs. And so it's a balance.
Yeah. Pull that string a little bit more. What's it like? What's the environment like at the Daily Emerald? You just described a lot of people with a lot of different interests. I mean, I imagine it's a challenge to keep everybody sort of rowing in the same direction.
Yeah, I think it's a big thing about just, like, motivating people. Like, it's a 10-week term, and so when you get to, like, week six, like, it's like a slow burn sometimes.
Sure.
With motivation and keeping people going. And it's like, our community relies on us. Like, I understand that you have 6 midterms this week and you have homework and then you have to go to your other, like, club, but you also signed up to do a job. But also, like, you have to have empathy for people who are really busy full-time college students. And so it's always a struggle to balance that, but make sure that the job is still getting done at the end of the day. And so I pick up a lot of, like, slack, and so does our fellow editors and stuff, who are always trying to help each other out because it's a chaotic line of work, I guess.
Sure. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Tarek Anthony. He's the Daily Emerald editor-in-chief. So you did a great job explaining the independence. So explain how you cover the University of Oregon. Talk about that decision-making process, but also just sort of the daily interaction.
For sure. So at the University of Oregon, there is a very large media team, like, mm-hmm. public relations team. And so I have really close relationships with a lot of those people who work there. And so if anybody wanted to, like, get an interview with, like, admin or someone like that, you'd have to submit, like, a media request, mm-hmm. and then they may or may not grant it to you. There's a very limited flow of information. And so it's difficult sometimes, but that's just, like, the reality of working in a very large public bureaucracy.
Sure.
And so it's a constant, like, back and forth, like, trying to keep a positive relationship with them, and so you can get as much information as possible.
And you and the organization, you've broken important stories about the U of O. I mean, it must feel somewhat gratifying to know that you've done that, because that's the job. And it's also interesting because they're also your college.
Yeah, for sure. I try and, like, keep myself, like, a little as separated as possible. Like, obviously, it's the university I attend, but I'm also closest to the university of anyone in Eugene who could be covering something, because I'm experiencing, like, the budget cuts. I'm seeing it firsthand. I'm seeing my professors being laid off or whatever the case is. And so I try and use that to my advantage to keep plugged into what's going on, so you can break those stories and have those sources. And there's a lot of disadvantages to going to the college that you're covering. And so mm-hmm. I try and find the advantages where I can.
Sure. It's a strange time in journalism right now. And I mean that in terms of both the, let's face it, a lot of newspapers are closing up shop. And then, of course, there's a tone right now a lot of it starting, let's be honest, at the White House and the federal government that sometimes, oftentimes talks about journalism as the enemy of the people and whatnot. What's it like running a student newspaper and knowing this profession right now might be under the most pressure and having to overcome the most challenges that it's ever had to do?
I think that makes it all the more important and all the more motivating for me personally, and I know other people that I work with, because it's more challenging than it has been in the past, but it's not less important. In fact, it's more important when there's attacks from the federal government and even from administration. Like over my 3 years, I've seen the flow of information and the access to information and or interviews or whatever the case is, even the public records, just like gradually decrease as time has gone on. And so that makes it more motivating to find inventive ways to break the news. And it's especially at our university where we've faced significant budget cuts and other issues that have been going on that are impacting students, tuition, employees, the Eugene community. It's super important to keep plugging away. And so there's definitely a lot more roadblocks, even than when I started at the university 3 years ago. But the job still has to get done.
There you go. Maybe staffers or just people you know might come up to you and ask you for advice about the profession of journalism or the future of journalism. What do you tell them?
I think, I don't know. We joke a lot about like unemployment or low pay and stuff like that. But like, that's just like how, like no one's going into journalism expecting to like get rich quick or anything like that. So I think it's pretty well accepted from a like money and career standpoint. And like, we're all fighting for the same internships and the same post-grad jobs, and we're all facing the same struggles. And so I think there's a community around that. And, but people love what they do. And so they continue to do it and they continue to do a good job at it. Even though it's hard, and it's even harder now to even find any employment. So I think that there's a good community around that, and that we try and make light out of it as much as possible, because otherwise it's just depressing.
Sure. Well, my assumption is you want to go on in journalism. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. No?
What would you, if you could wave a magic wand and get your ideal starting job, what would it be?
Starting job? Well, my like passion and where like I started in journalism is covering politics, both nationally and locally, and so that would be like the ideal job somewhere. But my like long-term goals I would like to cover Middle East politics. That's where I've researched in college, and that's where my like real true interests are. So that's like the long-term goal.
Okay, Tarek, my last question for you is, you know, share with us what was your most memorable, what be it story or experience as the editor-in-chief or just working at the Daily Emerald?
There's been a lot of memorable experiences, but I would definitely say covering the federal building this past winter, getting tear gassed with some of my friends, closest friends that I've been working with for 3 years, was definitely quite memorable. And just like that experience of being out there each night. Like, I covered the Palestine encampment extensively 2 years ago, and I thought that was a pretty crazy experience, but like the federal building was nothing like it. Like, getting tear gassed, running from like federal agents as they're screaming press and they just don't care. It's just like an experience I will truly never forget, but one that I'm grateful that I had the opportunity to provide for our community, even though very unfortunate circumstances.
Sure. Well, it sounds like you're ready for a career in journalism. he's Tarek Anthony, the Daily Emerald editor-in-chief. Tarek, thank you so much for coming in and chatting.
Thank you.
Now let's hear from our reporter about a library in our community on the budgetary ropes. Rebecca Hansen-White, reporter for us here at KLCC. Rebecca, thanks so much for coming in.
Happy to be here.
You've been doing a lot of stories, especially around budgets and budget cuts. Why don't you tell us the latest of what's going on in Cottage Grove, specifically around the city budget cuts and how it's impacting the library?
Yeah, so Cottage Grove, their leaders knew, I think, have known for a couple months, it's going to be a pretty tough budget year. So they had some a previous finance person or team made some mistakes in accounting how much money they actually had. And they are quite behind for a couple years in a row on their audits. So they realized a little later in the process than you might normally in a budget cycle that they were going to have to make some serious changes, mostly in the form of cuts. And then that paired with a lot of governments across Oregon have this structural imbalance. So their property taxes have plateaued because of some long-term ways Oregon's taxation system works. Mm-hmm. And they have, you know, the high pension costs and high overall costs that we're all facing. And so that's left them having to make some cuts. And so they've looked at a couple things. But I think what has attracted the community's attention is the library. So they're thinking of, in this budget, switching to, in Cottage Grove, a volunteer mostly model with keeping the head librarian and then staffing everything else with volunteers. Hmm. Some city council members and community members objected to that, so they're trying their best to keep one part-time person.
Okay.
And so that is kind of what's – they need to figure out how to cut, like, $500,000. Dollars in the library was one of the places they were looking. And so all of these decisions are not quite final yet.
Okay.
There's still meetings to go before they vote, including opportunities for people to weigh in and do public comment. So people who oppose that or want something different, I talked to a community member who believes the library should have twice the allocation that they've been left with, and she'd like it to increase. And so, you know, there's definitely, you know, and the city manager has kind of said we've got to make some cutbacks to make sure we can still operate the library.
Yeah, and I know you did talk to some opposition groups, and obviously libraries are tough because obviously they're such a community resource. Did the city manager also talk about other ways in which they might be cutting some services in the city at large?
Right now, I don't have a lot of details on some of the other cuts, but I think that Cottage Grove is in a multi-year reduction process.
Okay.
So this is year two of a three-year effort to stop spending down their reserves. And so I think the library is one of several steps along the way to try to shrink their footprint where they can so that they can stop spending down, you know, their basically rainy day fund to save it for a future rainy day, but also so they can start having the ability to put money into reserves instead of just constantly taking it out.
Okay. While I have you here, you've also been very busy covering political races and the primaries that happened just days ago, really. Talk about the really contentious race that was happening in sort of eastern Lane County and between David Lovall and Springfield Mayor Sean Van Gordon. Something happened recently. There was a concession. Talk about that.
Yeah. So there are three commissioner races currently up for reelection. West Lane, the incumbent, pretty easily won. East Lane is between Heather Buck, who is the incumbent, and Jake Pelroy, who is the challenger. She's a progressive. He's much more conservative. And that one appears most likely, and I think both candidates have acknowledged this and said they're ready for a rematch. That match is going to runoff likely in November. There was a third candidate, so he will be dropped. And then those two are going to move for a rematch in November. And so that race is now a long-haul race.
Mm.
The race that's probably not going to a runoff, and we actually had a candidate, the incumbent David Lovall, concede that and congratulate his opponent over the weekend, Sean Van Gordon, that he, David Lovall, had roughly 40% of the vote. Sean Van Gordon had like 52%, and then there was a third candidate who took a small percentage.
Okay.
And so over the weekend, you know, David Lovall congratulated Sean Van Gordon, who's the mayor of Springfield, who won that race, and kind of said, yeah, I have no regrets. I wouldn't do anything different. You know, this is how the cards shook out.
Sure. Well, and just remind folks, Lovall brings some controversy, and that certainly, I imagine, was showed up in this election.
Yeah, I think that, you know, he has had some hostile interactions with some county employees and has had some complaints and then an investigation, and now he's suing the county saying they're violating his free speech. So I don't know if that turned off some voters, and kind of what he said, that the root of kind of where that's coming from is his goal is as an elected official is to hold people accountable and ask hard questions, even if it makes people uncomfortable, is kind of how he sees these interactions. And, you know, on the other side, Sean Van Gordon, he believes that these types of interactions, these types of situations that Lovell has found himself in are distracting from important issues. And he wants to help people collaborate and work together and refocus on some of the regional problems that, you know, are struggling to get solved.
Yeah, and I think his statement a lot of times he would make is he wants to calm the waters, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Rebecca, my last question for you, going back to that East Lane County election, just remind folks, what triggers a runoff? What are the numbers in terms of when you have to go to that type of a secondary election?
Yeah, so getting the most votes isn't enough. You need to get more than 50%, 50 plus one, to win outright in the May primary. So, you know, Jake Pelroy got 48% and Heather Buck got 46%. And so since neither of them met that threshold, it's going to go, you know, they'll drop the third candidate and then those two will face off in November. So it's you have to get an actual majority of all votes versus just coming in first.
Got it. Rebecca Hanson-White, she covers education, she covers politics, she covers everything. Thanks so much for coming in and talking
with
us.
Thank you.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. You know when you click one of those lengthy terms of service contracts when signing up for something like a streaming service or a mobile phone contract? Well, you probably are also unknowingly signing up to waive your right to sue if something bad happens. Tomorrow on the show, a legal expert joins us to talk about the murky world of forced arbitration. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.